Coming up next on the Witness the World podcast, the entrepreneur within you.
In my case, it took me 18 years. I decided to become a coach because I realized that the thing that I've always loved doing in all the different positions that I had was always around people, helping people, always, you know, mentoring people, training people, coaching people, giving them advice. I love those aha moments that I see in the eyes of people when they have a breakthrough. This is my biggest reward.
The Witness the World podcast represents the personal views of the host and guests at the time of recording. These views may change over time. The content here is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Any content here should not be construed as financial, medical, or any other type of professional advice. Please consult with a qualified practitioner should you require any professional advice. Good day, everyone. Welcome to episode 13 of the Witness the World podcast. My name is Ben Choi, and today we'll be heading to Finland. Our guest has been a corporate leader focused on business development and investing in startup companies from around the world. He's also an educator, business coach, and a podcaster that covers all things about entrepreneurship. Today, we'll learn about his journey and how he helps elevate others so they can level up their business. We'll also pick his brain on how best to start a new business and the keys to success. Laurent Notan, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Ben, thank you for having me.
Great to have you on here. Business topic is really great these days, especially with people starting all their side hustles and people, you know, transitioning from the working world, trying new things. So I thought, this would be very beneficial to our audience. And to kick things off, because you're in Finland, I've been to Finland once many years ago, but maybe not all of our audience have been there. I thought maybe we'd get a little flavor of what it's like to live in Finland these days, because when you hear on the news, depending on which media source you go to, there's a lot of challenges there. Here we've got inflation, supply chain shortages, that sort of thing, labor shortage, and also, I mean, energy crisis going on in Europe. I'm just wondering what it is like there on the ground in Finland, and maybe you can tell us like what are some of the best things about Finland that it has to offer that we don't know about.
Okay. All right, thank you. Well, first, you need to know that I've been in Finland for 3 years because I'm French originally. And so I moved to Finland after 20 years of living in Southeast Asia. And so when I moved, I followed my fiance to Finland. That's why I went to Finland. But I wanted to go to after 20 years, you know, of Asia. It's a bit chaotic over there. I loved it for 20 years. But I got to a point where I needed a change, like a complete change, 180 degrees change. And I needed, for example, I needed people to stop at the traffic light when the light is red. You know, if you live in Southeast Asia, you know, you people will not stop at the traffic light, like in Vietnam, for instance. Or I lived in Cambodia, Laos. It's the same. So I needed a lot of discipline. People in Finland are very respectful, I would say, of the laws. They're quite disciplined, especially if I compare them to French people. There is a high trust in a government. Things get done. There is no. It's a rich country. I mean, you don't see poverty. There is a strong social security system. You got access, you know, you got free healthcare, free education for the kids. Of course, you're paying taxes and a lot of taxes to get that. I think Finland has been number one in for the past, I don't know, 5 6 years in an annual survey that they do about the happiest country in the world, and Finland has systematically ranked number one. I think that is one of the reasons why. Another reason I would say it's because people are very close to nature, and this is also something that I wanted. There are like 180,000 lakes or more in Finland. So there's forest everywhere. It's a beautiful country. A lot of snow and during the winter, a lot of sun during the summer. People tend to go back to nature a lot of time. You can find in Helsinki, where I live, there is forest everywhere. There's a lot of green parks everywhere, so it's very easy to step into the nature, and everything is done for people to walk around. Everything is done for hikers, you know. And there are a lot of national parks, and so everything is done for hikers over there. There's a lot of infrastructure, so it's I really love it. It's a great country. Of course, there are some cons. It's very close to Russia. I think they share a border that is long, that is what, more than 1,500 kilometers long. Russia used to, well, Russia invaded Finland years ago, and they stayed in Finland for quite some time. Finland celebrated their 100th year anniversary of independence from Russia. If I recall, it was like 5 or 6 years ago. So there is a lot of tension. You don't see it, but you can feel it. And there's the fact that Finland has asked to integrate NATO is a strong statement to, the situation with Russia. You don't see it on a daily basis. It's still like, business and life as usual here.
So thanks for the summary, Laurent. It's interesting to hear that things are business as usual as much as can be. It's good to hear a little overview there. So, Laurent, I want to kind of touch into your background history and kind of your roots and how have you got to Finland? Because initially you were saying that you were from France and then you were kind of traveling around. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about like your travels, and then you did a lot of work in Southeast Asia and doing different kind of jobs there. So maybe just give us a broad overview on that. I think that would be great.
So I left France 23 years ago at the age of 23. My partner at that time, she found a job for 9 months initially in Laos. And I had nothing. I had just finished my studies. I did my military service in France, and I had nothing. So I thought, all right, let's go. Let's go on an adventure. And we went to Laos. This was my first time in Southeast Asia. This was my first time, I think, outside Europe. And 9 months turned into 7 years in Laos, which turned into 20 years, And so initially, I worked for a small research agency in Laos, so market research, and this is a field where I worked in total for 14 years, I think. And I studied as a project manager for them. It was a small research agency, I think 10 staff, all Laotians. I was the only foreigners, except the owners. They were like, she was French Laotian, and he was Khmer French. And after kind of 1 year, they came to me and they say, "Look, we're going to move to Cambodia because there are a lot more opportunities than in Laos. We need someone to run the business, and this is going to be you. So I was 24. I never ran business before. I did not even know what it meant to run a business, and so I started under their mentorship, and I just loved it. I loved all the the management aspect. It just kind of a natural fit for me. And since then, since that time, I've been managing businesses on behalf of others until in October 2017, I decided that it was time that I do something for myself. So I was in Laos. I spent 7 years in Laos. Then I moved to Cambodia, where I found a job for another market research agency. It was a bit bigger. I think when I started, we had like 35 or 40 staff. I ran it for 7 years. Then this company had an office in Cambodia, Vietnam, and Laos. After 7 years, I was promoted as the managing director for the three offices. I moved to Vietnam. That did not go very well in Vietnam because the business was in a lot of difficulties. After 10 months, I resigned because I also had some issues with the shareholders. After 10 months, I resigned, came back to Cambodia, worked for an advertising agency, running it also for 4 years-ish. And then I got the virus, the entrepreneurship virus, and I started my own journey as a as an entrepreneur coach in Cambodia in October 2017. And now, like I was saying earlier, I got tired of Asia, and so I had the opportunity to move to Finland, which I did in July 2019. So basically, that's 20 years summarized in 5 minutes.
That's great, Laurent. So you were in Asia for many years. You got to Finland, so completely different cultures. And would you say, yeah, all that world experience has made you better suited for what you do now? You kind of learn different things and seen how people operate differently. Maybe you can just give us a little bit of a flavor of like, yeah, what are the main differences and what are your biggest takeaways and learnings from your Asia experience and transitioning over to Finland now?
Sure. I mean, I strongly encourage people to travel and, go a little bit outside that comfort zone and try to understand how other people live. I think one of the biggest lesson I've learned is the fact that, the ability to get perspective on things. Because I lived in poor countries, what we call emerging countries, but there's a lot of 80% of the population in Cambodia still live in the rural areas, and you can see poverty. Some people, farmers in rural areas have nothing, but they don't look sad. Most of them look happy. They don't have in a city, a capital city of Phnom Penh. When I left, they started public transportation, just a little bit. But there is no public transportation in general. There is no social security. There is no healthcare system for free. People pay tax, but I mean, people pay tax. They try to avoid paying tax. There's a lot of corruption. And then, I look at what's happening in France, for instance, where at the moment there are a lot of strikes because France is increasing the retirement age from 62 to 64, and I think here in Finland is above 64. I don't remember exactly. And what I see is all those people who were born in a privileged country like France, but they don't understand that. They don't see it because they have been living it from the inside. They have not been able to, go outside of their box, elevate themselves. And that's a good analogy with entrepreneurship. Very important to elevate yourself as a business owner, and look at what's happening, outside. Because a lot of people are there, they have a lot less, but they complain less. They're still happy. So it's really about what you make out of things, you know, but it's really about what you make out of your life. So I think this is really what I've learned, like the ability to get perspective and patience. In Asia, for instance, to give you an idea, when they say soon, it can mean soon as in 5 minutes or 5 years. You never know. So you have to learn patience. You have to deal with it because you really don't have the choice.
That's great, Lawrence. I completely agree with you. Patience and perspective, that's really good. And those are some of my takeaways when I've done traveling around the world too. And with you and I, yeah, we would encourage others to travel in the world because like you said, I mean, if you're living in a bubble, your perception of the world is going to be totally different. Then you can actually see a broader sense of what's going on. And I guess be more grateful for what you have, I think is really important, and I kind of talked about that in some other podcast episodes. So having said all that, let's dive into the business side of things. I think people are interested in knowing, like, yeah, you know, like picking your brain about, you know, when's the right time to start a business? Now, this is a big question, and I was wondering if we can just unpack your thoughts on this because over here in Canada, North America, I guess mostly the industrialized world, some people start, you know, what we call a side hustle. So they've got their regular day job, they do a side hustle. Some people maybe are fed up with their regular day-to-day job, and all of a sudden they start from scratch. You know, either scenario, I guess it's fine, but I guess you need to have a game plan to get yourself started. And just wondering, yeah, when is a good time? Maybe you can fill us in. And yeah, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
When is a good time? It's not really a question that has an answer, because it's not kind of the right question. It's more about what is entrepreneurship. After having worked for entrepreneurs, I've been always surrounded by entrepreneurs, like for 20 years. You know, I've talked on my podcast to, I think I did like 170 episodes now, plus all the coaching that I've done. There's one thing that I've learned about entrepreneurship. Is that it's a calling. You have it or you don't. A side hustle is a side hustle. It's not entrepreneurship necessarily. A side hustle can become, you know, bigger and can make you an entrepreneur. But the real question is, are you an entrepreneur? If you're not sure about the answer, maybe you're not, you know. Everybody I talk to, they have a, it's like having a virus, a good virus, you know. They have this calling in them. Now, it can take time to blossom. In my case, it took me 18 years because I felt I wasn't ready. You know, my father was an entrepreneur, didn't meet me at that time when I left, but then because I was surrounded all the time by entrepreneurs, I don't know if something, you know, tilted in me, and I was like, okay, I need to do something. I feel it's there, it's in me. But then I took my time. I took another year. Once I decided that, okay, I'm gonna do something, I took a year to really think about it. I had to decide what is it that I want to do. You know, you could be an entrepreneur, okay, fine, you're an entrepreneur at heart, great, but what are you gonna do? You know, and so I wanted to do something that made sense to me. A lot of entrepreneurs crave impact. You hear the word purpose, you hear the word the why from Simon Sinek, you know, but it's impact we're talking about. They want to make a change in the world. Like they genuinely want to do that. And being an entrepreneur is a great way to make a change in the world. And so that was kind of my thoughts. You know, how can I make an impact? What makes sense to me? And I processed that for 1 year. Then it was on the back of my head. I continued working in the advertising agency I was talking about earlier. But in the back of my head, it was, you know, slowly growing. And I remember one day I was in France on, it was in 2017, August 2017. I was in France on vacation with my mother's and my parents. And I woke up and I was like, I know. Night is a good counselor, they said. But apparently it's true because I literally knew what I would be. And I decided to become a coach because I realized that the thing that I've always loved doing in all the different positions that I had was always around people, helping people, always, mentoring people, training people, coaching people, giving them advice. I love those aha moments that I see in the eyes of people when they have a breakthrough. This is my biggest reward. I decided to become a coach. And so that's the other area I would suggest people to look at. If you know you're an entrepreneur, just take your time. Don't rush into it, because you really need to think about what is it that you're going to do? What makes sense? You may have an idea, great. You may see something in the market, an opportunity that nobody has seen. But does it make sense to you, to who you are, to the values that you share? Do not start a company because you want to be a millionaire. Do not, that is the worst way of starting to becoming an entrepreneur, for the money. All the podcast guests that I have talked to after, like I said, 170 interviews, they all have one thing in common. They never talk about money. Never. Unless we're talking about money, in terms of financial management, the importance of having cash to grow your business. But other than that, they don't worship money because they understand that money is just a means to an end. It's not the end. So to go back to your question, do you have it in you? And then what is it that you want to do? If you're not sure, take your time. Better to take your time than to launch something and hit a wall and crash and burn yourself. I've seen a lot of startup funders failing because of that.
Thanks for that, Laurent. Yeah, those are some great insights there, and sounds like you have to take your time and do that inward journey inside within yourself. Maybe go on a beach and just kind of write out some notes or something, and just kind of have that thought process going to really identify like the real reason why you're getting into entrepreneurship, setting up some ideas and building it, and see if that really speaks to you at the core, I guess, to find out what that conversation is like and just have that conversation. So that kind of leads into my next question here. You talk about the crash and burn of businesses, and in a lot of countries, you hear these statistics where like 95% of all new businesses, they fail within the first 5 years, or various kind of similar statistics. And now, in this world, and I alluded to in the intro there, like we got things like inflation, like jobs, like the shortages of people to work jobs, and supply chain shortages, all these kind of things. So there's a lot of risks when you're starting your business, and you kind of talked about, but you really got to think out your ideas before the next phase, which is obviously planning things out. So as someone that likes to get rid of the bad news first, we'll talk about like these kind of risks there. So like, what is your approach to like coaching some of your clients, and what you've seen over the years? Like when you see all these risks, once you formulated the idea, like you're doing the business for the right reasons, how do you navigate through all these different risks, a lot of these things that are out of your control? I'm just wondering if you could share your thoughts on that.
It's a good point. What I came to understand is that entrepreneurship is a mindset. It starts in your head and it ends in your head. So if your head is not in the right place, your business will not be in the right place, because there's no difference between you and your business. You are your business. You're the engine. And when the engine grips, the car doesn't move forward. It's the same with the business. When the engine grips, your business doesn't move forward, you're stuck. That's what I call being the bottleneck in your business. So all my work is really around that mindset. You have, I mean, think about how difficult the entrepreneurship journey is. You know, when you start a business, okay, you realize it's for you, you have an idea, et cetera. You don't have money most of the time. Now you have to convince people, to come and work for you with no money. That's a tough work. And then you have to learn so many things. You have to make so many decisions. You have to wear so many hats at the same time, and there is no guidelines. Nobody, it's that you're not, you're, it's not like, a construction with plans from the architect. You don't have any plan. So you don't know. I mean, you can make a plan, but in my point, the image I want to use is that there's no plan to tell you where to put which bricks, where what is going, what is the size. From time to time, what happens is that, you start the construction, you hit a wall, bam, you have to start again. You also start a construction and you have absolutely no idea when it will end. So that requires a strong mindset. It takes grit, it takes resilience to be an entrepreneur. Because one thing is for sure is that you're going to fail. You're going to fail hard sometimes. But that's the only certainty that you have in the journey, is that you're going to fail. But every time you fail, you have to stand back up and get back at it. So that requires, to have the right, again, to have the right approach. That requires to be strong inside here, in your mind. That's why I'm saying entrepreneurship is a mindset first and foremost. It's very, very, very important. And I see a lot of entrepreneurs, startup founders who don't have it. If you listen to most of the successful entrepreneurs, or not most, all the successful entrepreneurs, they share that common asset, which is their mind, right? They have found a way to be resilient. I have a client who just sold his business in October for a lot of money. When he talks business, he's a bulldozer. He goes, nothing will stop him. He's from England, and he decided one day to launch the product. It is in bakery, to launch his bakery's product in the US. And in 20 years, his brand became the number one bakery brand in the US. Imagine how strong in his mind he was. He believed in it, and nothing would stop him. And of course, that comes with a lot of sacrifices.
That business that, the bakery business that you were saying
Yeah.
there, so he was successful, but probably wasn't always like that. So just wondering what kind of challenges that this, individual kind of had to push through, when things weren't going that well. I just wonder if you could just share your thoughts
Yeah.
on that.
Yeah, it's a great example. He left, so his father is a baker. But he never wanted to become a baker himself. And so he left his family at the age of 16. He set up a company at the age of 17. He bankrupted it at the age of 18. Then it took him 10 years to recover from that. But one day he had the opportunity to buy a bakery business, which he did. And then from there, it was just all the way up. But he had to recover not only from one bankruptcy, but from a second one, because after he bankrupted his business, he went to work for his father's bakery, which bankrupted. And I think he was like 23 or 22, something like that. So by the age of 23, he had already experienced two bankruptcies. How many people have had that experience, and how many people would tell you, well, so it's over? So we'll never be an entrepreneur anymore. You know, I can take the example of my father too. My father is the opposite. He bought his father's business. Everything went well until he was, if I remember well, around 50 or something like that. And his business, after 20 years or more, bankrupted. He had to go and, you know, work in a warehouse to be able to make a living. He has not been an entrepreneur anymore. He stopped his entrepreneurship career after that. So yeah, being an entrepreneur is tough, and it's normal that you hear a lot of, I think it's 90% of startups that fail after the first 5 years, something like that. Because a lot of funders, and I mentor startup funders, do not realize how tough it is going to be. And here we're only talking about mindset. We're not even covering all the other aspects of, you know, product market fit, for instance. You know, is there a need for your product, which is, or for the idea that you have for your service, which is another big one. A lot of startups, a lot of companies start, and they have this idea, but they don't validate the idea among potential customers, so nobody buy their product. And then there is, you know, you have the idea. The idea is great. There is a need, but then the next step is how are you going to sell it? And you hear a lot of entrepreneurs who are afraid of selling. Because selling is a difficult one. We in our mind, we have a lot of examples of bad salespeople, right? So another business skills that you need to acquire. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, in terms of business skills, you also need to be really good at financial management, which is another aspect that is neglected by many entrepreneurs. But financial management is critical. You need to be really good at time management, because you're going to be really, 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 really busy. You need to have a vision. You need to set up a strategy. And then, as I mentioned before, you need to convince people to come and work for you, you know, become a leader and make them all work together.
Thanks for those insights, Laurent. That's a lot to take in here, but yeah, very important points there. So I think one thing that kind of resonated with me is the fact that you were saying, you know, like your mindset, that's got to be the building blocks of
Yes.
being an entrepreneur. So taking a step back before you start getting into the weeds of, oh, let's do financial management and hire people, how would you build a stronger mindset before you even start, you know, getting into the entrepreneurship game? Like, is there other things, like people say, you know, do meditation, you do different
Yeah.
kind of like activities to kind of, you know, harden your mind? Just wondering, yeah, like how do you build a stronger mindset just outside of business? I'm just wondering, what do you do maybe, for instance?
Well, I do CrossFit. So I found the resilience into challenging sport, CrossFit. And there's actually a lot of analogy between sports and entrepreneurship. You know, I often compare entrepreneurs to professional athletes, because professional athletes understand the importance of the mindset. You hear the best professional athletes, you know, they have found a way to push harder when things get hard. The most successful entrepreneurs are the same. But the thing is, with the mindset, is that some people naturally have it, have a stronger mindset than others, not naturally. But having said that, there are ways to build a stronger mindset. You mentioned meditation, that could be one. Sports definitely is one. But I think what is really important is to work on your emotional intelligence, what we call EQ. Emotional intelligence starts by being aware of your own emotions. And because when you are aware of your emotions, you know what's going on. And if you know what is going on, then you can change it. You can control it better. Every time we feel something, our body has a physical reaction to it all the time. You feel anger, your body has a physical reaction to it. And usually your body starts with that physical reaction even before you feel the emotion. For instance, if I get angry, I can feel it. It's coming inside my, it starts in my guts, it's growing inside. I can feel warm, and it goes up, 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 and baff, it explodes. Now, once being aware means that you need to be aware of your physical reactions so that you know what emotion this physical reaction is going to trigger, so that you can control it before it actually happens. You cannot control the environment, but you can control the way you react to it. And that takes training. That takes time. And I've been working on it for many, many years. And it's, I'm French from southeast of France, Mediterranean. And so being angry, or being not angry, but being like loud and complaining, it's part of my nature. So, I think I've been getting better, but I know it's still in me, and it will always be in me. But that's it, what I would say, build your emotional intelligence. Then another tool that I use a lot to be more resilient, routines. Routines help me build that discipline that you need to be resilient. Morning routines are great. I love them. It can be whatever you want, because they give you like a direction. They give you a sense of achievement. They give you a sense of control. Sometimes it's okay to you take a hit. Accept it as it is, because it will pass. That takes also, I think this is also linked to emotional intelligence, but taking a hit is fine. You are human. You're not a machine. You take a hit, it will pass. Once it pass, go back at it. So the best way when you take a hit to overcome it is to focus on the opportunity. My motto is this Albert Einstein's quote: in the middle of difficulties lie opportunity. You take a hit, you are affected, okay, let it pass, but then at the same time, focus on the opportunity. Because once you find the opportunity, you are giving yourself a lot of positive energy. And they will help you stand back up.
Those are some great thoughts, Laurent. So, out of curiosity, of all the people that you have worked with over the years, like how many of those people that, haven't been doing so good in their business, like could have been attributed to their emotional intelligence? Maybe like 50% of the people, maybe that was their biggest challenge. And because they couldn't get over that, they couldn't see the other opportunities that are around them, because maybe it got, we call it tunnel vision, being the bottleneck of your business, like you were saying there. Is that like maybe 50% of the time that's what people are challenged with?
No, 100% of the time. I mean, 100, every entrepreneur has become the bottleneck at one point. Every entrepreneur faces the same challenges, like this mindset, issues we were talking about. I give you an example. I had a conversation with an entrepreneur. Had a small market research business, 20 staff, more or less. He's been in business for many, many years. And he had his director for 7 or 8 years, right? They built friendship, and it went very well. The business, grew under the management of this director. Now, COVID happened, and during COVID, the director's performance went down. Okay. After COVID, my client was really struggling with the issue. What should he do about him? with him because he knew he could do better because he used to do better. They were friends, so he was a bit afraid also of, talking about it because he was afraid of his reaction. He was afraid also of losing him. So he was stuck in this, he was stuck in his own thoughts. You know, when we have all these questions turning into circles in our head, all these bad questions that have no answer. And he was just stuck like that. And as a result, he was not acting upon the situation, a situation which was frustrating him because director's performance was down, the business performance was down. And because he was getting frustrated, that added more frustrations on top of his frustration and on top of all his worries. And all it took was one conversation with him. Because then we all have the answers in ourselves. Deep down, we know what we need to do. We know. He knew he had to have a conversation with his director, and he knew he was ready to let him go because for the business, it was the right decision. He knew that deep down inside him, but he was refusing to accept it. And this is through discussions that, he finally came to see it by himself, accept it. He had a conversation with his director, and he didn't have to let him go because the director was unhappy and he resigned. He lost 1 year, more or less, in the process. So it affects even my client I was talking about, who sold his business 20, after 20 years. I am sure he made a lot of bad decisions because of his mindset. I am sure. And maybe as a result, his business would have been in even a better place. He told me that he knows his brand can be, it could be the business, well, sorry, the brand could be worth $1 billion, US dollar. But he was not the right person to build it. So he was leaving now. Again, not the right mindset.
Thanks for the share there, Laurent. So, yeah, we covered a lot on mindset, which is great. And that's 100% of the battle, according to you. And yeah, which is really important. I mean, we talked about emotional intelligence in our last episode. And I'm of the opinion that if your emotional intelligence kind of drives the bus in your life, it doesn't matter what skills you got, what knowledge and experience you have. If you don't have a handle on the EQ side, I don't think really anything matters too much because you're going to be stuck in a cycle or a loop, as you were talking about that other individual. So let's kind of pivot over to the next steps here. So let's say we've got that foundation of our mindset. It's strong, we've got some business ideas that we're doing it for the right reasons. And then we need to do some research. I think that's one of the key things. And because of the internet, a lot of the information is free today. So we can all find things and research on our competition, our product market, all that kind of thing here. And technology is a big thing that has, helped people as a tool. And one of the tools, I've kind of dabbled with is the ChatGPT, doing some research using the chat tool and comparing that with results from Google. And I'm starting to lean toward, using ChatGPT a little bit more because some of the answers are, more focused. And I think probably some entrepreneurs out there, they're probably starting to use that too. So I guess my next question here is, like, where's a good place for people to start doing their research? I guess it would be the internet maybe, but yeah, just wondering what your thought process is to, yeah, dive deep into the research side of things.
Okay, well, I work 14 years in market research, so I can tell you all about what it takes. What it takes first is to remember why you're doing it. And the big mistake that all the do-it-yourself researchers, okay, 95% of the do-it-yourself researchers do, is to start by writing down some questions. Don't do that. Go back to why. Why do you want to run the research? You know, what is it for? And then from there, establish the information that you need to collect to answer the why. And that is really critical. This is the first step, putting the first steps first, right? Not writing your questions first. Now, after that, once you've done that and you're very clear on that, you're very clear on why you're doing the research and what information do you need to collect. Remember, market research is about, any research is about making an informed decision. So you need to be very, very clear about the type of decisions you need to make. Once you've done that, then there are many, many ways to collect the information. You mentioned some, you know, the technology like AI tools like ChatGPT can be Google search. It's great because there's a lot of things available out there, a lot of reports available out there. This is what we call secondary research. But they will never replace primary research. Primary research is when you talk to people. You can talk to them through email. You can talk to them through, you know, messenger platforms. You can talk to them via phone, or you can talk to them face to face. But that will never replace, that is, the secondary research will never replace the quality of the information that we get, that you will get from your potential customers, the people who will potentially use your product or service. It's really, really, really important to talk to them. And again, I see many startup founders not doing that. You know, they stay to the secondary research, they have a great idea, but they don't double check that people actually want it. Maybe they want it, maybe they don't want it, but or maybe they want it under certain conditions, in which case you need to adapt your product or your service to those conditions. So that is what I would say. This is very important if you want to get the right product market fit.
So thanks for the answer there, Laurent. So you talked about, you know, some difficult conversations. Keep having those about your business to understand, you know, why you're doing it, the right reasons you're doing things. And I think one of the things is like we all have to kind of keep in mind of is like the difficult conversation of, hey, you know, my business, it's not getting the traction that it wants to, and having that difficult conversation like, hey, maybe is it the industry has changed, so then I need to change what I'm doing. And just wanted to get your take on some of those difficult conversations you've had with some clients. I'll give you an example of what I'm kind of curious about. So let's say I opened up a coffee shop. I like coffee. This is my thing in my, you know, brainstorming. I like to do something with coffee. And the environment in front of me, I look at, there's so many different coffee shops, you know, people selling coffee online, and a lot of headwinds there to get things started. Obviously, cost to, you know, set up, you know, your supply chain, your materials, get a place to, you know, open up like a retail front. All those things are costly. So, what kind of conversation do you need to have with yourself? Or is this something where you need to have conversations with people that can, you know, challenge your, you know, beliefs and research? It's important to surround yourself with people to give you that feedback and maybe hire a business consulting coach like yourself,
Absolutely.
or a family or friends to be critical. Like, it's, I think one of the things is like we shy away from that brutally honest feedback that's critical, but that comes from a good place. And like, how much do you see out there where, you know, entrepreneurs, they kind of shy away from that feedback because they don't want to hear the bad news, but that is the good stuff that you need to hear to make yourself better.
Yeah, it's not, I would say it's not that I don't want to hear the bad news. Is that they have a difficulty to ask for help, which is a bit different. Why are they not asking for help? Ego is one. You know, entrepreneurs, they have a big egos. You know, they also don't want to maybe to disturb other people because they don't think that Nobody else has that experience. And this is where they're wrong, is that they feel that they are alone. Many times I hear, I'm so alone. And it's true, it feels alone at the top. But you're not alone because there are so many people around you that already have had exactly the same experience that you are facing right now. Exactly the same. And so they have been able to go through it successfully or not. Therefore, they have things to say about it. So you said, surround yourself with people. Yes, absolutely. Surround yourself with people internally. Recruit the best for your business. By best, I mean not only technically, but again, mindset, behaviors, attitudes, soft skills, very important, before technical skills. And also externally, reach out to people externally, people who have the knowledge, people who will challenge you, people who will tell you, the bad news that you don't want to hear. Those people can be can be other entrepreneurs, so your peers. They can be coaches like myself. They can be mentors. They can be suppliers. They can be your competitors. I've had when I was working in the market research industry and in the advertising industry, I would have like discussions, monthly discussions with my competitors. So we're friendly competitors. We need to learn from each other. It's also a way of understanding, our perspective on the market and see what they're doing good and they're doing bad, etc. And stay friendly because, there's no life or death here at play. So yeah, absolutely. Reach out, surround yourself with people. A lot of the time when people reach out to me, for instance, in the case that you mentioned, I would go back to the impact they wanted to make, the purpose. One of the most common bottlenecks that I've seen is to lack clarity of direction. Because you lack clarity of direction, you don't know where you're going to go. So you don't know if you're going to go left, right, straight, what to do. That is often linked to a misalignment with the DNA of your company, what we call in French the raison d'être. You started your company for a reason. And somehow along the way, because you're busy doing a lot of things, you have lost that alignment. So it's very important that you go back to that and see how far you are. The best tip that I can give you is to remember the day you had the idea of the company, because this is when the story started. Usually, because when you go back to that day, you can relive it and you can also feel it again, and you will be able to explain why you started your journey, okay? And how far are you from that day?
That's good. Yeah, thanks for that answer, Laurent. So, I think at this kind of leads into my next kind of thing I wanted to ask you. So, because you can talk about the execution and then the constant review of your business, and it should be the review of your original vision, the original reason why you got into business, go back to the beginning. It sounds like that is probably the most important thing, execution, all this kind of stuff there. It's kind of secondary, and that's where you got to keep reviewing what you're doing. It aligns with your original mission, and ha keep having that check-in. And the people that I guess keep having that check-in, they probably are more successful than the people that don't have that check-in. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, it will. I agree. I agree with you. It's what I call the DNA of the company. Okay, that will never change. It's always there. You hear a lot when you come to a point where you ask yourself, why I'm doing this. You've lost motivation. You're not sure, you don't find happiness in the morning when you to go to work. Okay. That is the right moment to go back to your story. Okay. And then do your staff, do they know that story? Have you ever told them the story of how your company was created? Because who is the best people to deliver the story to the world? Not you, it's your people, it's the staff. Okay. You have to tell your staff, this is where I'm going to go. This is why we're going to go there. And you're the best to get there. That's why I chose you. And this is where we're talking about leadership here. Right. And that's another typical bottleneck symptom that I see is not sharing your strategy with your staff. Starting with your reason, but also not letting go. You see a lot of entrepreneurs, they hire leaders, but they don't give them any decision-making power because they are afraid that they will make mistakes. So why would you hire people if you don't trust them? You hire people better than you. I didn't say that. I think Steve Jobs said it. Okay. You hire people so they tell you what to do, not the other way around. So you have to let go. You have to let go of your willingness to control everything all the time. Because as the company grows, your role must evolve because you have, at the beginning, everything is tied around you, you're small, but as it goes, you have to let go. You have to empower people with more responsibilities, more tasks, and especially more decision making. And yes, they will make mistakes. It is part of the game, but you have to accept that and be behind them to clean. And you were talking also about research. We were talking earlier, sorry, about research. But research never stops also. You need to continuously talk to your customers. Because your customers change, because their environment change, so they change, so you need to adapt. Okay, is your product market fit still the right, the right one? Maybe your vision, the reason is still the correct, but you are misaligned with the needs of your customers. There are many things again that entrepreneurs need to consider when growing the business, and many things that also could affect the growth of the business. But like I mentioned, the most common bottlenecks that I see is the lack of clarity of direction. It's the fact that they don't let go as the company grows and their role evolve. And tied into that is also another good one is when they are lost into details. Like my client I was talking about, who's not sure about what he should do with his director. He was lost into details.
It's kind of like people thinking analysis by paralysis. Have you heard that term where they kind of think too much and then they get kind of stuck
Yeah.
and not doing anything, actually?
You have so many things to think about, as I mentioned. It's so difficult. So many decisions, so much pressure. How can you pay the salaries of your staff at the end of the month? Every genuine entrepreneur has asked himself or herself that question at one point. I mean, an entrepreneur, by genuine, I mean someone who cares. Okay. And so, it's normal that you want to solve everything, but at the end of the day, but because you are stuck into all the details, you're lost into them, you're not getting anything done. And so it's very important that you take a step back, always elevate yourself, to go back to what I was talking about earlier on. Elevate yourself, look at this 360 picture and focus on what matters most. And forget about the rest or delegate it to someone else or just scrap it. Okay, if it's only nice to have, you don't need to have it now. Okay, focus on what matters most, what you must do right now.
Thanks, Laurent. We covered a lot about business mindset, and that is sounds like that's the key here. So I think just to leave us off here, maybe we'll kind of wrap things up with a question that maybe, or maybe a couple of questions that you think that is best for all entrepreneurs to ask themselves, to check themselves. Like, what are the maybe two questions that you ask yourself all the time when you were in business to give yourself a check, and maybe that'll help people moving forward to, see things in a different light.
I think I want to go back to what I was saying earlier. One of the questions I always ask myself is, does it make sense what I do? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Because I got so many ideas all the time. So I'm a solopreneur, right? I want to keep it that way. I don't want to be something that goes behind me. So this add another difficulty. I'm my own bottleneck all the time. But it's always about like the focus. It's like, is this a distraction, that idea that I have, or not? Does it fit into the big picture? Does it fit into what I want to do? Does it fit into who I am? Is it aligned with my reason? Is it aligned with my values, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Okay. This is the most important question that I ask myself. Something else also that is tied to it, which we have not talked about, but maybe it's the right moment to do it, is to ask yourself, because I see that a lot of time, who are your clients? Who do you want to work with? Are all your clients, are they great? Because if they are not, you have a problem. If you're not working with the right clients, you are not going after the right people. You are not like your business cannot blossom because you're stuck. Because what you want is to make sure that you always work with your ideal client. Because the ideal client, they never complain about the money. And they will always support and they will always support you. But that requires to make a little bit of sacrifices. Do not chase your clients because of the money, but chase them because of their qualities, right? And if I want to add something that is that I always ask myself is my cash okay? Cash, cash, cash. I said, yes, don't do it for the money, but realize that you need cash. If you want to grow your business, you need cash. Your number one priority as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, is to make sure that you have cash so that you can pay for the salaries of your staff, you can pay for your overhead, but you can also invest it into growing your business. And that is why you must learn about financial management.
Thanks, Laurent. So, financial literacy, education, and mindset. Those are my main takeaways from our chat today, which is it's great. And you shared a lot with us. So, as we wind down this podcast, I'd like to ask my guests a two-parter question. So, it goes like this: what are you most grateful for? And what are you most looking forward to in the future?
I've been pondering on that question for a while now. I think this ties back to what I was saying earlier. When I was talking about being grateful for the fact that I got perspective. I think I'm the most grateful for what I have today, what I have achieved. I had setbacks, of course. Could I do better? Of course I could, but I need to remember that where I come from, my family wasn't perfect, but it's not about that. It's about the fact that where I was born in France, in a rich country. I'm a white man, which in itself is a privilege. And I was born privileged. And I think that that is really important that I always remember that. And because that has helped me indirectly come to where I am today. So I think this is what I'm the most grateful for. And what I'm looking forward to is my in the next future is my wedding in September 2023. It will be my first one and my last one. But at the age of 47, by then, it's time.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congrats, Laurent. Yeah, thanks for
you.
that personal touch there. So besides the website that we see on the screen there, where else can you be found on the internet?
All right. So people can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Laurent Autin. I also have a podcast, which you can find on my website, just at /podcast. But you can also find it on all your favorite podcast platforms, such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts. It's also on YouTube.
Thanks for sharing, Laurent. So that's a wrap for episode 13. Thanks for joining us, and namaste, everyone.